I'll come to order. Roll call.
Roll call for Monday, January 21st. Anderson District 2.
Here.
Anderson District 28.
Here.
Barnard.
Here.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Present.
Christensen.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Dockstader. Driscoll.
Here.
Amrick.
Here.
Esquibel. Geis.
Here.
Hastert.
Here.
Hicks.
Here.
Hines.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Nicholas.
Here.
Nutting.
Here.
Perkins.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Rothfuss.
Here.
Schiffer.
Here.
Scott.
Here.
Von Flatern.
Here.
President Ross.
Here.
Dockstader.
Here.
30 present.
Prayer by Pastor Billy Minder.
Our Heavenly Father, thank you for this beautiful Wyoming morning. Tonight is Martin Luther King holiday and another Inauguration Week. We are grateful people for life with us. That's why we're not counting for this day. But thank you for that for your time. I ask that the men and women who stood in this story with us, who are chosen by their fellow Wyoming friends and neighbors, at least 7 years ago, give it wisdom and clarity and stability to impact their agenda. I pray, Father, that the decisions they make today, decisions that will affect the lives of all the citizens of this great state, will continue to achieve the values of freedom and liberty of my spirit. I pray, Lord, that as a result of this, these senators, that my members will continue to be a beacon of our country, so that we can have freedom, independence, individualism, and teamwork, that fiscal responsibility and management, and that the power that is.
Amen. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Reading, correction, approval of the journal. Will the reading clerk please read the journal report?
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of January the 18th, 2013, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Jim L. Anderson, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. There is no nurse or doctor of the day, so don't get sick. In Wyoming history, in 1949, the state legislature passed an anti-drunk flying bill. Senator Von Flatern, I hope you took notice of that. Thought for the day comes from Martin Luther King. I look to a day when people will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. Today is Wyoming Equality Day, and we celebrate Wyoming Equality Day, a holiday to commemorate the life and legacy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. This day is a day for celebration and a day to remember how far we have come as a country to ensure equal rights. As a member of this body, Senator Liz Byrd introduced legislation to recognize the birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King. Her bill was signed into law in 1990, declaring the third Monday in January a Wyoming holiday to celebrate civil rights and equality for all. How fitting that Wyoming's holiday was named Wyoming Equality Day, given throughout his life, Dr. King advocated equality for all. The Equality State is proud to celebrate Dr. King's birthday today. I will leave you today with one of Dr. King's many eloquent remarks. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. Could I have Brianna Walsh come to the mic right here, please? Members of the Senate, we have a new page with us today, Brianna Walsh from Central High School, and she will be with us. And I have a pin for you that is the state seal of the state of Wyoming that we give to all the pages when they come. And we hope that you will wear it proudly. We appreciate your service to us, and it will be a great experience. Don't hesitate to contact any of us if you have any questions, and we'll try to be appropriately courteous to you. So with that, if you want to say any words, you're welcome to. If not, we're welcome to the Senate.
Thank you.
Okay. Is anybody announcing you up there, Deb? I will. Folks, we have here today the Youth for Justice kids that I've been so well used to working with over the years from Cody and Senator Coe's country. They're sitting in the back up here looking and working on a couple of bills. So if you'd welcome them to the Senate, that'd be nice. Okay, now, introduction. Oh, Senator Bebout.
Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor?
Yes, you may.
Members of the Senate, you have your golden rod that's been passed out to you today. And, Mr. President, real quick-like, I would just like to go through the only changes that you see from the one we presented to you last week. And if you turn to page 2 and you look under the appropriations section, starting with House Bill, it says 1116, but I think it should be 116 or 16. You'll see from there down there's about $40,000 worth of additional appropriations. Mr. President, that are bills that are now in the hopper that have moved forward in one body or another body, and that's the reason they're profiled there. Other than that, Mr. President, everything is pretty much the same. Of course, you don't see the Appropriations Committee recommendations because they're not on there yet. I will tell you, Mr. President, that your Appropriations Committee had a pretty interesting week last week, and we did have our markup. We completed that Friday afternoon, and staff is now preparing the budget for us to look at. We will have an opportunity probably midweek to go in and see if what we thought we did, we really did. And then we'll get that budget out to the full body. And with that, Mr. President, I'll be glad to answer any questions if there are any.
Discussion. Okay. Introduction, reading, and reference of bills. Senate File 143, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 143, Cruelty to Animals, sponsored by Senator Geis, an act relating to crimes and offenses.
Senate File 143 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Senate File 100, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 100, Sales Tax Overpayments Refund Period, sponsored by Senator Cooper, and act relating to sales and use tax.
Senate File 100 is referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Senate File 144, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 144, Bidder Qualifications, Community Colleges 2, sponsored by Senator Von Flatern, and act relating to community college district boards.
Senate File 144 is referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Senate File 145, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 145, Merit Career Technical Scholarships, sponsored by Senator Meyer, and act relating to career technical education.
Senate File 145 is referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Senate File 142, first reading of Senate File.
Senate File 142, Utilities, Rate Making, sponsored by Senator Case, and Act Relating to Utilities.
Senate File 142 is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. Senate File 147, first reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 147, Stroke and Heart Attack Treatment Centers, sponsored by Senator Kraft, and Act Relating to Public Health and Hospitals.
Senate File 147 is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor. Reports from standing committees.
January the 18th, 2013, Mr. President, your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 106, Projects Funded by Abandoned Mine Land Funds, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, Meyer, and Perkins, Senator Bebout, Chairman. January the 18th, 2013, Mr. President, your Committee Number 4, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 63, School District Special Reserve Funds, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, O2, Cole, and Ruffsuth. No, Senators Barnard and Landon, Senator Co-Chairman.
Bills on second reading. Senate File 4, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 4, Livestock Disease Reporting and Liability.
Senate File 4, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 47, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 47, School Finance Amendments.
There are some amendments. Reading clerk will read. Second reading amendment number 2. We had already adopted amendment number 1 on the previous day, and then the bill was laid back. Reading clerk will read second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 47.
Senate File 42, second reading amendment number 2, page 1, line 4.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 2 to Senate Files 47. And that's, we're on 2.
We're on amendment number 2.
Thank you. Mr. President, Senate, what this amendment does is, you'll recall, we revamped the methodology in which the mechanism which we reimbursed districts. For those rebated recapture districts, they pick up their funds in they're essentially in a position where they have to pay for their education along the way, out of their own proceeds instead of out of the foundation program account. And the notion is that sometimes they get their payments in two installments instead of one. If they get the one installment property taxes, it'll come in December. Otherwise, half are divided up into November and half into April. If they have enough taxpayers dividing their payments up, they might not have an opportunity to cash flow their school expenses for 2 months. The concern, and we've offered them a tax or essentially an interest-free loan to go to the foundation guarantee or the foundation account to borrow monies for their operations, but they're required to pay it back by December because the assumption is by December 15th they would have their tax revenues. There was some concern that if enough taxpayers divided their payments into two installments instead of the single installment, that they might not be in a position to repay the loan from tax revenues, even though over the year they're going to have extraordinary revenues that would have to be recaptured. So what we're finding here is that in the event that they've not collected enough revenues to pay back the interest-free loan, then that interest-free loan component can be postponed long enough to where they actually collect their taxes, and this would make probably be in April. So it picks up it fixes a concern that the beta recapture districts have that has not materialized, but if it does materialize, we'll solve that problem. Thank you. I'd urge your support.
Discussion? You ready for the question? Question has been called on second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 47. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That amendment has been adopted. There's another amendment, the amendment number 3. The reading clerk will please read it.
Senate File 47, second reading amendment number 3, page 1, line 4.
Senator Coe or Senator Office? Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, this amendment makes a clarification with regard to expenditures. Oh, my apologies, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 47 and ask the body for favorable consideration. This amendment for the school facilities accounts and overall funding changes the eligibility to share distribution of money from the foundation account. This is another concern that we've been discussing during the interim with regard to the merging of funds, basically, between accounts that are supposed to be applied to a savings account, which is a special account that the school districts can maintain of up to 10% of their annual funding. And it's supposed to be used specifically for major building construction, capital construction, facility repair and replacement, as it says at the bottom. However, what's taking place in practice in some situations, or certainly can under current statute, is that school foundation program funds can be saved up to a portion for that year. So these are funds that are supposed to be basically going to teaching and education, not building, can be put into this special reserve account. And then the next year, you could take that money and build a building with it, effectively circumventing the separation that we have between school facilities and the school foundation program account, which comes through the funding model. This amendment tries to clarify, or it does clarify, that that's not an acceptable practice, and it creates a barrier there. As you can see, the key to this amendment is in lines 22 to 31, which indicates that expenditures of amounts received from the public school foundation program amount shall be restricted to the provision of the educational programs prescribed in statute. In other words, those funds that are coming in through the school foundation program account must be used for those statutorily outlined objectives. And then it's further delineated in lines 26 through 31 that no amount distributed from the foundation program account shall be spent for school capital construction, major building and facility repair and replacement as defined in statute, or for any local enhancement to school buildings and facilities as defined elsewhere in statute. It's just trying to make sure that there is that bright line between the funds. We've had some concerns with the buildup of some reserve accounts, that it might be school foundation program money going into these accounts and then later on being used to build buildings or enhancements, when, as everybody in the body knows, we've established a system where school facilities and major maintenance is covered by one set of accounts and the school foundation programs are covered by another. Hopefully this clarifies that, Mr. President. I'd urge for a favorable vote and answer any questions that folks might have.
Mr. Vice President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Just a question of the sponsor. Do we have, without getting into specific school districts, do we have any idea the amounts of money that may have been captured this way and was in fact used for capital construction?
Senator Hines?
Mr. President, my question would be on the building and facility repairs. Would this restrict, if they were short of money in the other account, restrict them from using this money for repairs that was necessary?
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, my concern with this amendment, other than the extent to which it invades local control, is expenditures shall be restricted to the provision of educational programs prescribed by WS. And without having had time to look those up, I'm concerned as to what those are. And with this amendment, are we making those prescribed programs a statewide curriculum such that you can't offer a program that's not in that? And if you wanted to, say, offer a foreign language in a middle school or something like that, if that isn't prescribed in there, then you couldn't do it. I wonder about this. But also, Mr. President, I see a loophole. It says expenditure amounts received from public school foundation restricted, but you get an amount that I don't think comes through the foundation program that is from the local mills that the Constitution says you got to levy, and this amendment doesn't apply to that. So I don't think you're getting the bright line you're looking for either. Mr. President, unless I'm convinced otherwise, I think we'd be best off without this amendment.
Senator Schiffer?
Mr. President, I too am concerned, and I agree that there are some loopholes in this, and those guys are smart enough to figure that out if I can. But also, this is one more measure, it seems to me, where we're telling, and the 48 school districts, they're as different as night and day. Once more, we're reaching down and telling local districts how to educate kids and what the priorities are in these individual districts. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I just worry, and I believe this is another encroachment on telling them, go manage your finances and educate the kids to the best of your ability. And if you got to move resources around to do that, that's what we encourage them to do. And we're restricting that once again. I'm very nervous about this this piece of green paper.
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. President. Standing on and sort of, as I've heard quoted before, ambivalent about this particular amendment, but I do want to clarify something. We're talking either, and this is for the presenter, the 15% regular savings they are allowed to carry forth or the 10% special reserve would be one question. And I think the tall senator from Natrona asked about the fact that local mills, and I think you'd be hard-pressed even if at one time we wanted all local mills for education run down to the state and then redistributed back. And I don't think we quite got to that point, but I think it's all considered foundation money. So, the legal eagles in the room probably clarify that a little better for me. But my question would be, is this which account of those savings accounts are we dealing with on this?
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise as a member of the Education Committee who, on a parallel piece of legislation last week, I was a no on a similar measure, and I think that some of the concerns have been outlined by some of my friends in here. I feel a little bit at a disadvantage because I suspect that I'm not very much different than many of you in here. I don't know how our schools are financed down to the very line item. It's a very, very complicated system. It's difficult to follow. But all of that said, my heartburn with this is just simply that we seem to just encroach a little bit more all the time on a district's ability to be flexible and to be reactive. And, the testimony that we got in committee on a parallel piece just simply was not compelling enough to me to tell me that there have been any abuses. And we've got big time professional finance officers out there in those districts, and I'm just not convinced that this is needed. So I will be a no on this amendment.
Mr. Majority, floor leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on and for the amendment. Folks, what we're talking about here is the public school foundation program amount. And what the amendment is attempting to say is that we have accounts and we have budgets for operating schools, which are the operating budgets. We have separate budgets for capital construction, budgets for major maintenance, and routine maintenance. When we appropriate for schools, whether you collect it from your local sources of revenue or whether you get it from the school foundation program account, either way you calculate it, we give, in essence, a block grant to operate schools on an annual basis. We appropriate sufficient funds, what we believe, for you to operate the schools. And if you look at all other budgets, when we appropriate for state programs, at the end of the day, if you don't use your money to operate your program, if the Department of Health, for example, doesn't use it all for the Medicaid system, the dollars revert back to the general fund. What we don't allow is the Department of Health says, you know, we're going to save money, and with those operational dollars, we're going to go out and buy a building with it. If they want a building, they have to go through another account for their capital expenditures. Because these are block grants, the way we get reversions is if they accumulate money beyond the 10% reserves. So if you have excess in above your reserves, they get accounted against your next foundation amount, and that's sort of how you get a reversion to occur. What has been happening is some districts, and generally their larger districts, are able to accumulate enough money, save money from their operating budgets. And you could do this, for example, by having large classroom sizes and having fewer teachers, and then you can build these reserves. And they're moving the money out of their operating budget into a special account. And in some instances, and it's happened here in Cheyenne with the South High, for example, they went out and they paid for all of their enhancements out of savings from the foundation program guarantee amount. And frankly, if we gave them operating dollars that were in excess of what they needed to educate their kids, they should either come back to the state or they pick up in reversions. And it's not our, should never be our intent to say this is what we think is going to educate your kids or your students. And then you say, well, but if I save money, I can use it to build capital construction. We have other budgets for that. So this is simply saying, recognizing that the foundation program guarantee is to educate students. You can use it to educate, you can use it in program, but what you can't do is save your money, move it into another account so that you don't have to go to your taxpayers for enhancements or other capital constructions which are funded from other sources. I'd urge you to support this. Operating budgets are operating budgets, and those monies should not be held over, and you get a benefit by not teaching your kids or not using them for the classroom, and you can pull them out and use them for construction.
Further discussion? Mr. Minority, floor there. Questions been called? Senator Scott.
Yes, and nays, please.
A's and A's have been called for. Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28. Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
No.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
No.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Ross?
No.
Closing vote?
Hicks,
I to know. Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 15 ayes, 15 noes.
By your vote, amendment number 3 has failed. Further discussion on Senate File 47? Seeing none. Question is, Senate File 47 have been read 2 separate times. The question is, so the bill be read a third time. Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 54, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 54, limited alcoholic beverage permit.
Senate File 54 having been read 2 separate times. Question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 55, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 55, Energy and Natural Resource Education Initiative.
Senate File 55, having been read 2 separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 57, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 57, Highway Speed Limit Increase.
Senate File 57, having been read 2 separate times. Question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 69, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 69, Omnibus Water Bill Construction.
Senate File 69 have been read 2 separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 80, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 80, State Auditor Employee Payment Method Amendments.
Senate File 80 have been read 2 separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 94, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 94, Public Library Endowment Challenge Program Extension.
Senate File 94, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 95, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 95, High School Graduation Requirements.
There is an amendment. The reading clerk, please read second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 95.
Senate File 95, second reading amendment number 1, page 3, line 11.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 95, and I hope to be batting 500 by the end of second reading. Mr. President, this amendment addresses some of the concerns that were expressed regarding Senate File 95 in discussion and debate yesterday. There's basically 2 concerns addressed in this amendment. The first was a consideration by the good senator from Laramie County that there might be situations where a student graduates before 12th grade, and if we have 12th grade explicit in the statute, it might cause some difficulties. So you can see on the amendment lines 1 through 3, it deletes grade 12 explicitly and includes language the year before graduation. So if you have a student that is exceptional in some and ends up graduating after 11th grade, for example, that would be their last year. They would be required to have mathematics that last year. So it provides for a little bit of clarification under circumstances that might be a bit rare or unique, but might occur, and we need to make sure that we're providing statute that recognizes that. In the amendment lines 4 through 7, my colleague from Natrona County the tall senator from Natrona County, I believe it was, indicated there might be circumstances where perhaps more than 1 year of high school a student might want to be taking courses, credit-bearing courses at a university or through dual and concurrent enrollment. Again, there was no intent to restrict that type of circumstance, so the language has been amended to include courses and fulfilling requirements as opposed to one particular year. Both friendly suggestions from fellow senators, and I hope everybody would support the changes.
Any discussion? Question's been called on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 95. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That amendment's been adopted. Senate File 95 having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list?
Thank you, Mr. President. We do have a consent list. The list is the same list. I apologize, it's not. We've removed from the green sheet Set of File 96, compulsory school attendance, so that's taken off. So the following represents, and I move the following consent list. Set of File 9, private transfer fees. Set of File 34, law enforcement academy duties, director duties. Set of File 62, state board of education membership. Set of File 66, state funded conservation easements restrictions. Set of File 68, sales tax zapping. Set of File 82, game bird farm licenses expiration. Set of File 84, Wyoming health insurance pool premiums. Set of File 85, game and fish resident preference points.
Would any senator like any of the bills removed from the consent list? Seeing none, Chief Clerk, the question, excuse me. Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 9, private transfer fees. Senate File 34, law enforcement academy, director duties. Senate File 62, board of education membership. Senate File 66, state-funded conservation easement restrictions. Senate File 68, sales tax zapping. Senate File 82, game bird farm license expiration. Senate File 84, Wyoming health insurance pool premiums, and Senate File 85, game and fish resident preference point. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll. Emmerich,
aye.
Esquibel,
aye.
Geis,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Ross,
aye.
30 ayes. Senate File 9, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 9, 29 ayes, 1 no. Senate File 34, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 34, 30 ayes. Senate File 62, are there any changes?
Scott, no.
Scott, aye to no. Closing. Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 62, 28 ayes, 2 noes. Senate File 66, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 66, 29 ayes, 1 no. Senate File 68, are there any changes? Case aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 68, 29 ayes, 1 no. Senate File 82, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 82, 30 ayes. Senate File 84, are there any changes? Schiffer, aye to no. Close. Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 84, 28 ayes, 2 noes. Senate File 85, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 85, 29 ayes, 1 no.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate Files 9, Senate File 34, Senate File 62, Senate File 66, Senate File 68, Senate File 82, Senate File 84, and Senate File 85 have passed the Senate. Senate File 96, third reading of the Senate file. The reading clerk, please read the file. Just a moment. Let him read the file, please, and then.
Senate File 96, compulsory school attendance, sponsored by Senator Rothfuss, and act relating to compulsory school attendance, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senator Nutting.
Mr. President, may I ask that Senate File 96 be laid back for one day? One of the amendments I have realized needs some work on it, and I'd like to have one day to work on that, please.
Without objection, Senate File 96 will be laid back for one day. Considerations of bills on general file. Just a moment here. I've got all kinds of things going here. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business, consideration of bills on general file.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You all heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Senator Emmerich.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. First bill for our consideration is Senate File 6. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 6, Office of Consumer Advocate Revision, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, and Act Relating to Public Utilities.
You've heard the bill. What is your pleasure?
It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivisions, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Nutting, and Scott, Senator Hines, Chairman.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 6, there are no amendments. Mr. Chairman, it's a simple bill that extends the sunset of the consumer advocate, which is a position that was created about 10 years ago. And at that time, the consumer advocate took over the job of presenting cases on behalf of the public in front of the Public Service Commission. We've had previous sunsets, and we have extended them before. This one gives them 10 years of sunset. In addition, Mr. Chairman, the bill also requires that the Office of Consumer Advocate be subject to Senate confirmation. That is something that has not been true in the past, Mr. Chairman, and that is a new requirement. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and I think Senator Hines probably has some answers to this, too. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Question has been called for. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion to adopt, all those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, to do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 6, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The bill has passed. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 28. The clerk will read it, please.
Senate File 28.
Microphone, Dick.
Senate File 28, Resident Preference Provision, sponsored by the Minerals Committee, and Act Relating to the Administration of Government. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Mineral Business Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Senators Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Rothfuss, Senator Hines, Chairman.
Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File number 28, and I'll yield to Senator Cooper to explain the bill.
Senator Cooper.
Mr. Chairman, Senate File 28 covers a subject that has become old dance partners to us that we've kind of waltzed across this floor with many times over the past 11 years. And so I drew the short straw on this, and I guess I'll present it to you once again. Mr. Chairman, if you look, I'd like to start on page 2 of the bill and then go through the bill starting at that point on these are lines 13 through 15. Mr. Chairman, these are what these are. This is just a conforming amendment so that it, in fact, the procedures of this Title 16, Chapter 6, will indeed be included within the cities and towns statutes, and it's just so that any kind of bidding that they do or contracts that they do on capital construction, that it just indicates that they will include this statute into their rules or into their bidding process, I should say. And then if you go on down to lines 21 or section little I under 166101, you'll see we've now changed the definition of a resident considerably, and this goes on for several pages, and I'll go through each of the little changes that have been made here. As you notice that on line 24 and also moving on up to page 3 on lines 1 and 2 there's been a change. Basically what they've done here is over the years, we've kind of added more types of or new forms of businesses, and it seems like every time we add a new form of business to the statutes, then we got to keep adding it to these and then write different rules on who was the chief executive officer and so on. So what this does is just changes it to make all of these, to make it all inclusive and to make it uniform. So now we've said it that all business industries authorized to be formed under Title 17, which is actually the title in the statute that covers corporations, partnerships, and other associated types of businesses. And then if we move down to line 11 now on page 3, where it says natural person, that's just a conforming statute to say that, you know, in the law, the courts over the years sometimes construed a person as being actually a corporation and some other things. So now a natural person is like us, a human being, versus a corporation and so forth. And that's conforming with the section before that. Line 16 is also just a conforming amendment there where it added business entity and took out the word corporation. If you look on down to lines 20, down below on page 3, we'll see we've taken out the issued and outstanding shares of stock. And what this has to do with is that, you know, there could be all kinds of equity in a business. You know, people can own land and it has to be part of their equity in the business. It could be buildings or whatever. It doesn't necessarily always have to be stock. And also, when we change this to the business entities authorized to be formed, we had to be all-inclusive. And some of these types of businesses now don't really have any stock in them. So that's just a conforming amendment. Moving on to page 4, the top chief executive, this is on line 3, chief executive officer of the business entity. This is just to add a generic term, because chief executive officer could be under any of these types and forms of businesses we've talked to before. And it defines in the statutes what really a chief executive officer is, and we have that already defined, as you'll see later here in this bill. The next line on line 5, the business entities, again, is just a conforming amendment, as well as on line 8, business entity is conforming, as well as on line 11, chief executive officer is conforming once again. Line 17 and 18 on page are also conforming, but also under lines 18 and 19, you'll see it says the non-resident equity owned by the non-resident shall, and it gives a broad list of what this ownership is, and it consists of shares in the corporation and so forth. And it's kind of a broader meaning of what basically this equity could be. And it's also, this is also written in there also to keep, to kind of avoid manipulation by corporations and companies, like to all of a sudden just out of the blue create a corporation, say we're residents of Wyoming, and create that corporation. So this kind of prevents that manipulation. And also up on the next page, on page 5 at the top, same thing goes for that. Business entity is conforming, but also it prevents this manipulation of the number of resident employees. Under line 6 through 11 there, This has been a problem we've had in the state for a number of years now. One of the requirements is to be a certified resident contractor. It's listed on lines seven and eight here. Is you have to have your certification for workers' compensation in the state of Wyoming, as well as your unemployment requirements in the state. And what has happened on occasions in the past many times is we have somebody who bids a job as a resident contractor, and then finds out that during the bidding process that day that, oh, by the way, they didn't have this included in their bid package, the certification from the workforce services and so forth. Then they run it back to the workforce services and say, well, by the way, we'd like you to give us a retroactive certificate that we are, in fact, a resident contractor and have all these things in place. It's been a real hassle for the workforce services people to get this done. So this says basically in this section, in section M, that you have to have all this in place before you submit your bids and submit that with the bid package. On line 13, we're talking about the chief executive officer means. But then what this pertains to is we were changing under D, lines 15 and 16, You see, now it says a limited liability company has to have a designated member or manager of a limited liability corporation. And so it's just identify who the chief executive officer is and who these people are under a limited liability corporation. Moving on down to the next section, 16.6106, on this same page, we're talking here where we change, we need to look at, well, first of all, let's look at the agricultural products. That was a real tough one as to why we would even, the task force would take that on. And the only thing that we heard back from the task force was, I guess, basically that there could be agricultural products in capital or in construction products, but they wanted to kind of separate this out because, you know, as the Game and Fish, for example, bids out hay and different feed items for their, not only their own system of feeding process with elk and that, for example. And so they wanted to make this strictly construction, and they left that out. So, but that's the only reason that I think that normally any kind of agriculture products under a construction project are just listed as material. So moving along to the next page, page 6. Also at the bottom, I'm sorry, of page 5 and up on page 6, you can see where the changes were made to major maintenance. Upkeep was taken out, and the word renovation was added. A couple of things here. First of all, this is the way they're kind of set up in the capital facilities construction and capital construction statutes and rules, and they wanted to kind of make this to be conforming to that. And also moving on down to on this page to page 6 again. You see on line, make sure I don't miss any of these. In lines 4 again, they've taken out agricultural products and the words as grown here on line 5. But moving on down to line 16, where it says be constructed or maintained. This is just eliminating some repetitious wording that was in the there. And as you read through there, you can tell it's just repeating it itself. And then lines 17 and 18, that's conforming conforming wording as it has been back, as I mentioned earlier, in the statutes. Lines 20 down to 24, and actually all the way up on the next page, page 7, all the way up to line 3. This is taken out because they wanted to make sure that this is limited to construction only, and that all materials were just listed for construction and not have it mentioned for little projects that may be going on in different areas of the different agencies. This is strictly listed for the construction work, and they wanted to make sure that was in there. That. And you'll see when we get over to, I believe it's page 11 on section C, where this is brought back in again, and we do have the 5% preference listed, and it's all brought back into the statutes again. We're on page 7 now. Section 16.6109, you'll see there where the word fire has been stricken there, and that was just because there's many other ways to destroy a building besides fire. I mean, you could have a tornado or somebody, I guess, run over it with a bulldozer or something, but, you know, there's many other ways to destroy a building besides just burning it down, so they wanted to be all-inclusive here. Moving on down to line 24 on that page 7, as you can see, that's just conforming again, taking out the word erection, alteration, and putting in for construction. And up on page 8 at the top, major maintenance and renovation, that's just conforming. On page 8 then, moving down to section 16.6120, we have, again, conforming language in there as it was back on page 2 originally when we talked about it. So now they're all business entities, and we don't list all the different types because there's so many of them. Nowadays, moving up to page 9, we can see at the top there where it talks about who was declared intention. Now, this is has been a real tough one, and in fact, I kind of mulled this over quite a bit when I was trying to review this and look at what this section on resident really means.
And apparently there's been some conflicts with the with an AG's opinion. Basically, the AG's opinion, I understand, says that what's in the Wyoming Constitution, which constitutes a resident or citizen, is different than what it is in the United States Constitution. But what you see in this language here, the changes, is what actually is in Article 14, Section 3 of the Wyoming Constitution. I guess it depends on which way you want to go, if you want to go with the Wyoming Constitution or if you want to go with the U.S. Constitution. So I don't know where to take you on that, guys. But anyway, on that same page down on line 12, actually 11 and 12, it talks about within a 12-month period from the date of the first offense. This is just basically sets up a frame, a time frame, for this and to that's not currently in the statutes. And then, of course, down at the bottom it says this is clarification of a second violation or offense. Before, the way it was, it could basically go on forever. If it went on for 15 years and you had one violation 1 year, and 15 years later you had another violation, and so they wanted to clarify it and make sure that this was within that 12-month period. Down on lines, now we're still on page 9, on line 23 and also 24, you can see that's just conforming where it says or business entity. Moving up now to page 10, that's just conforming at the top of the page with what it says back on page 2 in the bill. Now we're in Article 10 on page 10, which now we're going to get into the capital construction projects, and it the first section, the first changes we have there is on line 14, where they've struck out legislative appropriating. You can see this is out of, I believe, one of the good senators from Laramie's bill from, I believe, last year, and just kind of repeats itself. So they've stricken that language, legislative appropriated funds appropriated. So that's the only reason that was taken out of there. Appropriated or authorized for expenditures, and then they struck out during the fiscal year. And what this basically does here, it goes under the bill that was done, I believe, last year. These were temporary conditions set in it. And also, so what it does, it just takes this, the changes in this bill from temporary to now permanent by striking that wording out of there. Moving up now, page 11. Let's see, the first changes we see there is on lines 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. And notice of all approved waivers should also be published on a website maintained by construction management, so on and so forth. And what this is that what we usually call here in the legislature the sunshine rules, to make sure that if the governor is going to waive any conditions on any of the statute that's listed here in the statute, and there's many of them. You can go into section 16.6.1001 and find a whole list of ways that governor can waive these conditions. But if he does, he has to publish them on a website, and like I say, they become put out into the sunshine rather than the darkness, so to speak. Then on lines 21, we're still on page 11, lines 21, and then also 22 and 23, some clarification there. General rule, this is basically the general rule for capital construction projects that apply to these different types of methods of construction. So this is clarification of what the 5% applies to as far as material goes for construction projects, and that's what this is for. Because, as you recall, we're still under capital construction part of the bill. And moving up to page 12, we're on line 2. It talks about a location designated by a public entity. Well, first of all, sometimes the entity that's funding it may be here in Cheyenne, and maybe you're building a school in Sheridan, so you probably want to have the possibility to have maybe – it's just an example. I don't know if they do this or not, but – you may want to have the bid opening in the location where the building is. Also, they may not even have a facility. Maybe a small community where they really don't have a place for having a bunch of people get in. And so it just gives them some flexibility where they can have the bid opening. And on line 6, it talks about 183504, and then it goes down to 8, 9, 10. All that does is add these rules or these statutes, excuse me, to the county county statutes for the state. Then there's several, on lines 12 and 13, there's several repealers here. What these are is basically 50% of the equity owners 16.6.101A, little a, little I, and B, and also E and G, through G. Basically, these have all been covered and changed on the pages of this bill, on pages 2, 3, 4, and 5. And these rule statutes would no longer be necessary because we've rewritten them in this new bill. And then 16.6.105, that was the preference for the ag products, and we didn't need that anymore because we've struck in the ag products out of here, and it doesn't need to be put into this part of construction. E 16.6.1001E, what that does, it eliminates the sunset and move this legislation from temporary provisions to permanent provisions. And what it does is it repeals the repeal. Originally, last year's bill said we repealed it in 2012. Now we're going back and say, no, we're not going to repeal it in 2012. We're actually going to make it effective again. And this bill here tells you when it's effective, July 1 of this year. Okay, guys, that's about it. Thank you.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, two items. One, distinguished colleague said it had been around past 11 years. I would like to amend that remark slightly. When I was first elected, this was an issue, and they had worked on it a couple of years before then, so it's been around at least 37 years. And this is as close to a perpetual issue as we get here. And then, Mr. Chairman, it was said that there was in the Wyoming Constitution, there was a definition of who a citizen of Wyoming was. And I, Mr. Chairman, I would request that reference could be repeated because I can't find it.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have some more explanation on page 6 of two items. One is the elimination of the ag preference, and the area that I have some concern about it. For example, if you're doing highway construction or doing a variety of construction, in many instances you're going to have reclamation as part of the project. So there would have been a preference that existed before these amendments for example, hay. It may be in a tight year. You don't want them buying Wyoming hay. But if you got a lot of straw or hay that's available in Wyoming, why shouldn't they get a preference? Why should you be encouraging folks to go down to going to other states? Why shouldn't they not have that preference any longer? And I can think of things like trees for a variety of products that are ag that may go into construction or seeding. Why not the preference? And the second part I'd like to ask about is also on page 6. And we're looking at 16-6107, and it appears to me now that you're mandating that any product that's manufactured in Wyoming has to be utilized, and there's no preference threshold, a 5% threshold. Rather, it's a mandate that if it's manufactured in Wyoming, you're required to use it. So I suppose, for example, if a fabrication firm that's fabricating steel beams, you're required to use them regardless of their price. They could be two or three times the cost of an out-of-state product. Or if I wanted to start manufacturing copper wire in Wyoming and the price is 100 times more than copper wire costs somewhere else, you're required to buy from me because I'm manufacturing in the state. So if those two items could be further addressed, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'll address some of the questions. The first, regarding the perpetuity of this piece of legislation, we did receive some modest guarantee, or at least a suggestion they might not bring a piece of legislation next year if we passed it this year. So we've got that going for us. Regarding other concerns, there was a request for the portion of the Constitution. We're talking about Article 19, Section 3, who shall not be employed on public works, which reads, no person, not a citizen of the United States, or who has not declared his intention to become such, shall be employed upon or in connection with any state, county, or municipal works or employment. And that was the provision that was specifically being taken into the legislation by the working group that looked at this over the interim. Regarding my colleague from across town's concerns with regard to the ag exemption, my understanding of how that came about was, as they were considering line by line the legislation during the interim, it was raised whether or not that requirement needed to be there to all of the folks that were present and were working within the working group. And nobody could come up with a specific example for an agricultural product that wouldn't be covered by the other terms in the statute, so it was suggested that that be removed. If my colleague believes that it's stronger with that, there probably wouldn't be any resistance. I certainly don't foresee any resistance to adding that back in. And as far as the provision that there is no exception for providing products from in the state of Wyoming, regardless of how much more expensive they are, I would say that's probably a good catch that we'll have to address with an amendment. I think that's certainly not the intent of the legislation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Von Flitter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question goes to, and I'm not asking for a ruling today, but a question to the committee. Did you discuss the possibility of two subjects in one bill, which, of course, we don't do, but the bill is called Resident Preference Provisions, and, of course, you address almost. But on line 6 of the first page, and then you go, shall collect insurance on destroyed buildings, and then it's put in on page 7, line 5, which really doesn't seem to be, it may be in the same area of the statutes, but it really doesn't seem to be relative to the title. And so was there a discussion as to why that was put in this bill?
Senator Land.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question that I had on page 9, failure to employ state laborers. I just would like a little more conversation, maybe some understanding as to what was talked about during the interim that loosens this statute up fairly dramatically, and I was just curious why that is. Perhaps it relates to the paragraph above, which simply states that if your workers in, say that they're going to become citizens, maybe you're okay, but just a little more conversation about 206, if we could. Thank you.
Senator Cooper.
Hey, Mr. Chairman. One thing, we do have two members of that task force or subcommittee that are here today, the good senator from Cali and the good senator from the greenest of Green Rivers that were on there that might also help interpret some of these questions for us today. At their pleasure, Mr. Chairman. But as far as the two subjects in the bills, I believe that any of the subjects that, of course, were covered in this bill were originally set forth in the statutes in this section, Title 16, as it is presently constituted. So I don't know if there would be any conflict there or not. That's something we'd have to probably have the staff attorneys look at for us. Mr. Chairman, but that's all I have to add right now. If one of the other people would like to add something.
Mr. Vice President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I want to talk a little bit about one issue, and that is what the bill does not do. And I think this body needs to understand that, and I haven't decided either whether or not I'll bring an amendment tomorrow to address that because it's pretty controversial. And if you look at the existing law, and it's under 16-6101-AJ, and what you still have, if, as this legislation moves through the system, you will still have a situation in Wyoming where if a corporation has been established in Wyoming under our corporate laws for 2 years or more, has continuously maintained a principal office and a place of business within the state for at least 1 year, and he has 15 or more full-time Wyoming residents and has paid workers' comp and unemployment. He's in good standing there that he, in fact, is a resident Wyoming contractor. And, Mr. Chairman, I bring that up because that is a loophole that's out there. And there are quite a few entities in our state that are now resident contractors in many states. And so the committee had a lot of discussion about, well, should you really be a resident contractor in one state, or should you in other states, and like this provision on current Wyoming law, be able to be a resident contractor in Wyoming and go south to Colorado, and also because you have another corporation set up and do different things, you're a resident contractor there. Mr. Chairman, I can tell you that this was discussed, and members of the task force can speak to it further, but it was discussed there, and it was not an issue that was received very well, because about half, or there are a substantial number of contractors in our state that operate under that provision of the law. So I bring that up, Mr. Chairman, because clearly if you really want to have a resident contractor be a resident in one state, and that's all you think they should be, and I will tell you that from my personal experience, I am a resident Wyoming contractor. I'm not a resident in Colorado or Utah, Montana, North or South Dakota, Nebraska, and when I go try to do business there, I'm treated as a non-resident. And that's a decision and a discussion that we may have tomorrow. So I just bring that point up, Mr. Chairman, to the Senate.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Being a member of that select task force, then we had some pretty good discussion with the contractors that were present, as well as our workforce services division. They had some concerns and some heartburn with our present statute, the way it reads, and how they were trying to enforce that. We discovered some interesting things, that they were actually issuing temporary residency status. And my ears perked up, and I questioned them about that. And basically, the companies that were coming in and bidding on projects would request this temporary, making promises that they would fill out the forms later, or the bidding window was short and they didn't have time, all the above reasons. The problem with that is that the bid is submitted, the bid is awarded, and business goes on as usual. And so we tried to clarify that. As far as the 16-6-206, we had to come up with some type of a period, again, in the effort of trying to assist the Department of Workforce Services on how they were going to enforce this, trying to make it as clear and as simple as possible. But we had to come up with a 12-month period from the date of their first offense if they were found guilty of not hiring the percentage of in-state laborers. Again, the problem is within the last 12 months, if they were to bid on a project, award the project, and not meet those requirements from this statute or from this particular bill of hiring in-state laborers, and then they were called upon again to bid another project, and they were guilty from the first within 12 months, then we would have to take a more serious look at that and basically prevent them and bar them from bidding on projects for up to 1 year because of the second violation. And so, again, it was the task force desire and effort to try to simplify and rectify the problems that the workforce division were bringing to the task force, saying this is a hard one for us to enforce because. And so we try to address those things in this bill. I don't remember the other questions, Mr. Chairman. If they'd like to repeat, and if it's still unclear, I'd again try to stand and answer some of those questions, having served on that task force, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Schiffer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, a question on that point. When you talk about the date of the first offense, is that the date? I don't think it's the date of bidding. It would be the date of completion of the project. Is that when the clock starts running? I'm just not sure what date of the first offense actually means. Date certain or when beginning, ending? I think it's got to be at the end when the project is substantially complete, but I'm not too sure of that.
Senator Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The quick answer is that during this job, any particular job, the Department of Workforce Services do make regular visits to the job site and check the records of these contractors and the employees, where they are from and their residency. And they do have these updates on a continual basis during the project. And so I would assume, Mr. Chairman, that that date of the offense is when they were first notifying the contractor that they were in violation that needed to be rectified. That was when the clock would start ticking. It was when they when the offense was discovered, was brought to the attention of the contractor, and they needed to rectify that as quickly as possible.
Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Hines' motion that when the committee of the whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate file, oh boy, what number? 28. Say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. Senate file 28 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 105. Will the reader please enter it? Read you. Senate File 105, School Capital Construction, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, an act relating to school facility projects. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, and Perkins. Excuse, Senator Meyer, Senator Bebout, Chairman. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee of the whole rise report to do so with a recommendation that Senate File 105 do pass. And Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment. I ask it to be read in. I'd like to move that.
Senate File 105, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 2.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 105. And very quickly, members of the Senate, this is your school capital construction budget. And you're very familiar with the process we go through at it starts with the commission, and they look at the different projects and go through the needs assessment that goes from there to the school facilities select committee, then to the governor, ultimately, Mr. Chairman, to the Joint Appropriations Committee, and we review that and come forward with the recommendations. And what you have, Mr. Chairman, is that process that now stands in front of you has gone through those four particular steps, and now we bring this full bill to you to have the Senate consider it. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to turn it over to my colleague from Goshen County, who's going to go into the specifics of the bill, and he will also explain the Standing Committee Amendment.
Woohoo!
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, if we we'll go through the bill, and I'll kind of explain the Standing Committee Amendment as we go. The first part is line 1, page 2, I mean, page 1, line 2, and line 3 are just conforming amendments to the title. We get down to line 16 on page 1. We're just matching up the fiscal years with the rest of the language where we delete July 113. Well, we're over on page 12. Okay, so Mr. Chairman, let me get back on track here. Thank you. I shouldn't have missed that meeting, Mr. Chairman. I was excused. Okay, Mr. Chairman, the bill does just exactly what the good senator from Fremont County said. It lines out our construction projects here. Let's just walk through the bill here on the second page. We're looking at the design projects. We put in a little over $4 million there. That's to get the schools in the pipeline.
We've got Carbon County, Park, Fremont, Natrona, Goshen, and Bighorn. That's the design. On page 3, Romanet 2, that's your capital construction projects. We added another $170 million or so to that. And those you can read is Park, Carbon, Fremont, Natrona, Goshen, Albany, Uinta, Fremont again, Laramie, Natrona, Bighorn, and Campbell. Then we're moving on to page 4 and the top of page 5. That's the demolition projects. You've got to demolish some of these schools here before you can build them again. We put a little in the Natrona admin building, Washakie, and Park again. On page 5, we put $2.95 million in for land acquisitions. You have to buy the land in some cases to, before you can build the buildings, and that's going to occur in Bighorn and Campbell and Fremont and Sheridan counties. Then there's also $6.65 million to do ancillary project buildings, and that's a new admin building in Lincoln and a bus barn in Carbon. We also have $1.5 million for track construction projects. That's going to occur in Johnson, Lincoln, and Laramie counties. Then we get into the component level projects. That's your major maintenance. That's to keep these buildings that you don't necessarily have to think about tearing down and rebuilding if you keep them up in good shape. And so we're going to put some more maintenance into Platt, Carbon, Campbell. And you can see the list of them on the back side. There's Platt, Campbell, Goshen, Platt, Campbell, a bunch in Fremont, a whole bunch more in Campbell, one in Laramie, and Weston in the bus barn. If you look at the different designations, you have some letters next to there. That's C, E, I, and S. And C means that you have at least a life expectancy of 20 years or more, so you can put quite a little bit of money into that. E, that just means you're going to put a shell or an envelope on top of the building. I is lights for illumination. Well, that was an easy one. S is for safety and security. Then, Mr. Chairman, we move on to the a little fund here for up to $6.6 million for unanticipated costs associated with it. Now, here we work into an amendment here on page 9, line 17. We add in $10 million. We delete the language and insert School Facilities Commission and report it to the Select Committee on School Facilities in a joint appropriation. So we just want to keep track of where that $10 million is going to. Now, on from page 9 going over to page 10, this gets into something that I want to show you here. This is the capital construction projects. And, folks, if you look at this sheet, you can kind of see the dark blue lines here and where it gets high. That's kind of where we spent quite a little bit for school capital construction. Then it goes down a bit. And then you can see these huge blue lines that are coming up in this biennium. And that's essentially the Casper High Schools moving through the system. We like call it just the bulge and the snake moving through. So we're going to be spending quite a little bit of money in those Casper projects at that time. We go in the new language there, and we talk about the prior capital, the prior supplemental appropriations, and we look at the parameters that have to do with future capital construction, and that's why I showed this sheet here. I didn't show the bottom line here, and you'll see where we had the top blue lines here. You also have a big increase in the price per square foot. So what we wanted to do as this next bulge moves through the system is allow some flexibility for School Facilities Commission and the director to make some decisions about how fast some of these things move through. Because if we move them through too fast, that square footage is going to skyrocket, and he's going to have to make some decisions there to kind of spread that out a little bit. So we give him quite a little bit of flexibility in the next few pages. And we put some parameters around it in sideboards. Over on page 11I, we say maximize the cost savings at or below project amounts appropriated by law. So we appropriated so much, so if it goes over that, we're just going to have to take a breath and wait. We optimize the workforce opportunities at a predictable and manageable level, and that's having him take a look at our capacity to construct both the bonding capacity, so to speak, of our local folks, contractors, and to look at the subs to see how many out-of-state subs are coming in. Give him, and those are some of the ideas that we said that he ought to take a look at. It's not in statute, but the gentleman is certainly well-versed in that. And we look at the construction throughout the state because we don't want to put all of the projects into one area and overload all the subs and all the contractors there. We want to be able to have them take a look to try to spread that out if at all possible. And at the end, though, he wants to prevent unnecessary delays in initiating and implementing the building facilities. So it's a delicate balance that he really has to take into consideration here in wisely spending our money and making sure that the schools are built on time. On the last part of the amendment here, Mr. Chairman, this essentially just makes sure we've got the effective date right, and it corresponds to the rest of the work that we did in the bill where we put A and B together. We deleted July 13th, and we said immediately upon the completion of all acts necessary to the bill to become law. So, Mr. Chairman, I guess long and short of it, I think we're going to spend about as much this biennium as what they indicated we would have to spend over the entire the entire life of all the projects. When they first said we needed to get into school construction, they thought about $1 billion would do the job. Well, we've already put in $1.3 billion, and with the addition of this, I think we're up to about $965 million this year. So, you know, we're meeting our requirements of building schools. Now, if you look at the outlay areas here, and I saw a little note in the paper today about some school districts a little bit concerned about getting on the list. Well, those numbers here are only ranging about 16 or 15 million. But folks, we got another 40 or 50 million out there in major maintenance that comes in every year too. So, we're still going to be spending a pretty good chunk of change going through the next few years. But it is going to slow down because I sincerely believe that we've built practically every building and funded it or will fund it, and it will be built in the next 2 to 3 years that was on the list. Now, more buildings will get on the list, but they're primarily small elementary schools, and you can build an elementary school for a lot less than you can a big high school. So the funds are in good shape. We've got plenty of co-lease bonus monies. Your JAC has made some provisions for some of those excess funds that will be coming through. You'll see that in the section 300. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would call the question on the amendment and stand for any further questions on the amendment.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 105, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? That amendment has passed. We are back on the bill. Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. My concern goes to page 11, first couple of lines there. My question is, what we've done is said that whoever directs the School Facilities Commission, insofar as it applies to the objectives listed below on page 11, is not subject to judicial review. Make me more comfortable with telling a state employee that he's got free rein and isn't subject to the laws of this state.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The purpose for that language, folks, is pretty simple, and that is that as we're moving through, we've got about $1 billion of capital construction in the pipeline. And that's more than we ever anticipated we'd have at any given time. Now, when you stretch, this bill is going to take 4 to 6 years, maybe longer, to complete all the work that's contemplated. But the issue becomes, how do we marshal the assets or the appropriations in a way that the taxpayer gets the best bang for their buck? At the same time, the districts get what they want. And districts are out there saber-rattling. Once they're on the list, they think that their school should go next. But we need to give flexibility to the Facilities Commission to marshal the assets or marshal the construction expenditure, the burn rate, in a way that we don't end up doubling the cost of our capital construction. And so the notion is, and most of these buildings, folks, aren't buildings that have to be done tomorrow. We've been doing construction for a long time. Laramie, my community's got a building on here. It needs to get done. But, if it was a year or two delay, these students are still going to get educated. Nothing's going to these aren't buildings that have been condemned in any fashion. So we've given authority for the school facilities director to use his judgment. What we don't want to have him have this instance where he makes his judgment and then all of a sudden lawsuits are filed and now we're spending all of our time litigating. And part of the reason we say it's not subject to judicial review because at most all you have to do is wait 1 year or 6 months and come back here and we can pass a bill that says build it next year. And this is simply an area that this is an exercise of discretion, of judgment that we're asking the facilities director to make. It's not a science. And if he makes a decision you won't like, and I can guarantee you that if it's to delay your building and your community by 1 year in order to get better construction value, everybody's going to go ballistic. And the first thing they want to do is run down and file a lawsuit. Lawsuits almost always take a year to complete. By the time you file your lawsuit, you get to the court, and you're off in a year. In that time, we will be back here. And any given decision, this legislature can override and insist that the construction take place next year. So this is an area where we simply say the disputes are going to be resolved on the Senate floor and the House floor in these bills and not in the courts.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, and I agree with my colleague that it is a delay, and sometimes school districts get impatient. But understand, as you read down through those criteria on lines 8 through 23, there are conflicts built into that. If, for example, and they're all done deals, so I can bring them up, if you take a very large district in the middle of the state that lined out a set of projects and wanted them all done at once, that meets some of the criteria listed below, but not all of them. And it was done at the expense of other projects that met all four criteria. And there's no way to resolve that kind of conflict if you can't at least file the papers. The judge can always say we're going to wait and let the Senate resolve it, and we will in a very good fashion, probably better in a good fashion. But it is very easy, given the criteria that are here, to have absolute conflicts. They're not, they can be mutually exclusive, I think is the word. And then you got problems. How do you make the guy do what the law says?
Senator Escobel.
Mr. Chairman, kind of going along with what the good senator from Johnson County mentioned in regard to the discretionary determination not subject to judicial review, and I agree with having some flexibility and having some standards, but I was just wondering if at some point you had someone that did made a decision that wasn't discretionary or the discretion was completely arbitrary, are there some provisions for assuring that the determination that's made is, in fact, discretionary but not arbitrary? Thank you.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Folks, this is really what we call the discretionary function rule. And ordinarily with the discretionary function rule, if an administrative officer, an executive officer is given the power to exercise discretion and he can go one direction or the other, ordinarily those discretionary functions are not appealable. And I suspect that even if this language with respect to judicial review are not in the bill, then the outcome would be the same, because once the executive officer exercises his discretionary function and says, I've read these criteria and two of them are meet my criteria, but in the end, the issue is, are we getting value for our construction dollars? And we had a situation not too long ago where schools in Wyoming were costing almost twice what they would cost the same school to be constructed in Colorado. And that's simply because we created an environment where there was large amount of construction happening on the Front Range. Right now, Wyoming happens to be enjoying an environment where we're not competing with a lot of contractors out of state, and they're coming into Wyoming, and we're getting the benefit to it. So the overall decision gets complicated because, for example, if you've got a large school in the middle of one of our larger communities, a high school that you want to build, and the construction costs come in at $170 a square foot, but you think it ought to be $150 a square foot. Well, you still have to look at what the environment is, not only in Wyoming, but the surrounding states, because if you delay it, you know that the environment is going to change next year. And there's inflation taking place. There's a massive amount of construction happening on the East Coast right now, so your construction supplies could go up. All these things factor into trying to make a decision as to when you receive, not only when do you bid it, but once you've received the bid, if the price comes in and it's excessive, do you say, we're going to call a halt to it, and we're going to delay it and make sure that we get value for our dollars. So all these are discretionary functions. What we're simply saying is that don't spend your time in court. If you've got a problem, come back the next year. All you're going to miss is one construction season because you'll be back here. Now, this executive officer also reports to our chief executive officer, the governor of the state, and the governor is in a position to influence these. But the question is, do we want the courts involved on these discretionary functions? And the purpose of this is simply to say no. Not only that, but you don't have a remedy. Your exclusive remedy is to come back to the legislature and say, it's not working, let's revamp it. And the reason we've done that is because is exactly the reasons that are articulated here to date, and that is we have given a large number of criteria that can be in conflict, and it may be only one of these decisions that leads to an excessive cost or an environment where the director believes will result in an excessive cost, and he makes the call. And fair enough, let's you move to another project, another part of the state, where maybe they're not having these influences, but there's other things. You could have other construction at your community college, at your university, that would have impacts on this, and we want those considerations taken in effect to make sure that the $1 billion that we put in the pipeline is not $1.5 billion.
Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to add for the members of the Senate's information is that when we looked at this, just for the money that we already had appropriated, not counting this new appropriation, and by the way, the significance of that Standing Committee Amendment is it says no capital construction projects in this particular bill will even get into the pipeline until July 1 of this year, is that we had 21 of these projects that could either bid, go to construction, or get started. And that was, I believe, $760 million. That was a lot of money, and we just wanted to be able to ensure that for talking about the square foot cost, but more importantly, you know, the resident contractors, but even further than that, if we brought a lot of non-resident contractors in, that we would, in fact, have the subcontractors in our state that could even do the work. And so we struggled with this language, not our committee, the new Senate committee, but I know that during the interim they worked on this, and it's just a way to put into place so we can get a handle on this and not compete against ourselves and take care of our Wyoming people.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, if you kind of look at it, you have to ask yourself the question that, okay, let's say they have judicial review and it goes in front of a judge and the judge says you're gonna have bids by the 1st of March and you're going to begin construction at the earliest possible date. And it will be that way, and you're going to spend whatever you have to make sure it happens on that date. Well, folks, I can tell you, I think under that circumstance, I think the bids are going to go through the roof. You know, you're put without some flexibility and some discretion, you're putting yourself out there for, you know, $260, $300 a square foot on some of these things when we should bring them all in under $200. Now, everybody knows that the money's there, you're on the list, you're circled, you're going to get your building built. Now, we just have to have a little bit of patience, I think, to know that, yeah, they should be happy that it's there, it's going to be built. And, you know, we could say, okay, we're going to guarantee that the big snake is going to move through the system and it's going to happen then. But what if we say that we're going to put all those two high schools in there and spend all that money and it's going to be a time certain? Well, if something happens in that community which delays that for a year, and you said that it had to happen then you've put everything else on hold. And then you lose the whole construction season. So if the director doesn't have the flexibility to move these things through with these parameters, we're really setting this ourselves up for a lot of failure. And as a good senator from Albany said, you know, if you don't get it this year, you're going to get it next year. Just have a little patience. It takes a while to spend almost $1 billion in construction.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm just kind of wondering where we're at. I mean, I don't even know what the list is anymore. We had big debates over last year with regards to the list, and now you see in the paper today, no list, no new schools, and of course my school district has asked for a formal hearing with regard to what's going on. I was privileged to be asked by the governor to join in a meeting on December 17th to discuss with contractors and the School Facilities Commission and the department and the director as to what's the best way to move forward. But yet I still have a lot of questions as to how we're even moving forward necessarily. The rules seem to change in the middle of the game almost every year that we're here. And without some sort of review process, how do we know what's going to happen?
Or how do we know why, when you thought you were on the list and now you're no longer on the list? And unfortunately, there's a high level of frustration here in Laramie County over getting schools that we thought were going to be built. They're still not being built. And so whether it deals with change orders or whatever, there are some major problems here, and we need to grapple with this and really come to an idea so we know who's on first base. And that, you know, you're not substituting runners in the middle of the game. I just don't quite have a grasp yet as to how this is moving forward. I do agree that it's fine to start a slow down and make sure we deliver it on an even keel process. But at the same time, there's the outliers and the ones that fall out, and then they're upset. And I just have a real problem now with removing some sort of review when particularly when they thought they were part of the game.
Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, while I like the words not subject to judicial review, that is, if I can pick which things are not subject, but my main question is, does the legislature have the authority to tell a different body of government, the judicial body, that they cannot review something? This is my question, which raises a lot of doubt.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. The answer is yes to the last answer. The question that particularly in those areas where there is a discretionary function, we have every right to say you're not going to review these issues. There's no judicial remedy for this. Obviously, even if we said there's no judicial review, if there was something to the like fraud, you might get a remedy, things like that. But as long as there's a discretionary function, then we can't eliminate judicial review for those types of things, and we do so in certain areas. And remember, we're the king in this respect. This is the state of Wyoming. The money belongs to the state, and the king gets to set its own rules when it comes to sovereign immunity, things like that. So in this area, now we do have other responsibilities under the Constitution, and that those responsibilities are to provide adequate schools. And if we're using this mechanism to deprive our students around the state of adequate opportunity or adequate facilities, the answer to that is no, because that's a constitutional right. But I submit to you that we're well beyond where we started in Campbell 1 and 2 moving through the situation where we do not or we don't have adequate facilities. We're now at a phase of I think we've addressed all of the older schools, anything that was condemned by virtue of the fact it was on a fault or it had an unsafe construction. Those things have all been addressed. Now we're beginning to take another approach, and the other approach is suppose you have $3 billion worth of total assets. You have to begin to look at what the life cycle of all your assets are, how fast do you construct, how fast do you, how much major maintenance do you do to extend the life cycle of a building. There's a variety of things that are going through, and what we don't want to do is create an excessive amount of major maintenance or fail to take care of the buildings such that their life cycle curves, the bathtub curve, however you want to describe it, become smaller. We want them extended out. So we know generally what our construction capacity in the state is for capital construction, our subcontractors, and we know that generally somewhere between $250 to $300, $400 million a year is pretty high. At some point, you can push all the work out of state, require out of state folks to come in and do these works. Now, some of these projects are large enough that Wyoming contractors aren't likely to use up their bonding capacity. Most general contractors are not going to come in and do a $50 to $100 million project and essentially use up their entire capacity on one project, and that's why you're seeing some larger companies come in and do the bonding on larger facilities. And then you have the issue with respect to capacity, which is addressed differently, and there you see there's a $10 million appropriation to begin looking at capacity. So you have a variety of issues out there, but certainly we're talking about now, and I use a great example, is the high school in Laramie. It needs to be replaced. It's at the end of its life cycle, but whether or not that life cycle is not simply going to end on one particular day. We're putting in major maintenance. These facilities can go another year, 2 years, or 4 years. Certainly once people know that they're in the list, they're excited to get their high schools, and they wanted to get it as timely as possible. Now, with respect to the other issue, and that is, how do you exercise this discretion with respect to the buildings that are in the pipeline? So the pipeline, as was reflected in this bill, are all of the schools that were teed up as of a year ago. You'll recall we were here a year ago, and we knew what the list was. We did most of the list last year. These are the balance of the schools under the list that was, let's call it, the last list. So this finishes out, and then over the course of the summer, a new methodology, a new group of folks were hired to come in and do a reassessment of all schools throughout the state, and that list will eventually generate a new list in order. But at any given time, if you went out on a specific day and you had consultants review all your schools, if the criteria changes, the lists are going to change. If your priorities change, the lists are going to change. And certainly what was happening, let me give you an example of how things change. If you go back about 4 years ago, we were saying that here's the, a percentage of your assessment would be by the physical character of the building. Is it suitable for its purpose? And then we look at capacity. And if you were at or under capacity, then you would never get to the top of the list. So you could have the worst high school in the state. It could be falling down. But since you're at capacity, you'd never get a new school. And, in fact, for a period of time, the only places that were, not the only places, but the largest volume of construction was in two communities. It was in Campbell County and Laramie County because of their student growth. And if you look at our capital construction that was completed in Laramie County, it was an enormous amount. We built a brand new high school. We built, I think, a half a dozen elementary schools here in this town. And the issues, but those capacity issues have not gone away. We know that we're going to have capacity issues in Campbell County and Laramie County, and those are good problems to have. If we're doing everything right, then we may have to build new schools. And as we go in the next round, I suspect that capacity will have a higher priority. But there came a time where we said, look, it's not fair to only address capacity. We need to look at, put a higher allocation of the relative merits of a project on non-capacity issues. Otherwise, some schools would never get done. Or suppose you're over capacity, but you've got a building that's about ready to fall down. So the rules are going to have to change, but those rules are supervised by us. We have a select committee that looks at the rules, and periodically changes are made. And once again, if a community decides that they want more schools, they can do all the saber rattling, but this is part of what happens to the process where the state is obliged to build the schools instead of local. No longer do you have to go out to local residents and say you have to build them on your nickel. It's going to be built on the state's nickel. So we're always going to have this stress. I know that a lot of these issues were of concern, and there were concerns about change orders, that were how they were being administered, how the director was doing, exercising his discretion. And I handed out a letter that this morning to you that there have been a series of meetings between your leadership, the governor, and the director saying, look, you can't micromanage these things. You've got to delegate some of your authority for change orders. We've got to move these projects. And what you see in this January 14th, 2013, are some directives from the governor to that department directing that these things be looked at in the interim. And there are a list of 10 items, and the governor added an 11th item to say we're going to look at these things. We're very interested in these. So we're balancing. We're balancing trying to get these projects in for a competitive price. If you look at this is a spreadsheet that shows all the construction moving through. And we attempted to do a correlation by the volume of work that goes out in the summer and measure that against the cost of construction. So we're saying if you go out at $250 or $300 million, does that drive up the construction cost? And the difficulty that we have in trying to correlate the cost of the square foot cost of construction to the volume of work is that you have to know more. There's the question is what's the market doing along the front range? Was it a remodel project? One of the most expensive projects we're going to do is Natrona County High School, where the community wanted to save part of the historic building. Remodeling costs are sometimes as much as double brand new construction. So you can't put a specific dollar amount on new construction versus old construction. If you're a community that has soil problems, that affects it. So there's a lot of things going in here, and we need to watch everything. But we do know that you can overbuild. You can put too much in the pipeline. And we have a lot in the pipeline. And part of the question is what comes next? And the select committee and the school facilities committee are in the process of generating a new list based upon new data, new assessments, and that will be coming down the pipeline.
Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, just a brief comment. In the interim, the select committee met, and we had a lot of problems because we didn't feel we were getting projects on the ground quick enough. And the director reacted to all that, and I think there's some changes being made. We're trying to expedite some of this process. But when you talk about capacity, that's the moving target. That's the moving target. I've got here the new ADM enrollments for October of 2012, and things have changed a little bit. Laramie 1's only up 18 kids. Natrona 1's up 674 kids. Campbell 1's up 363 kids. And Sweetwater 1's up 216 kids. So as these capacity needs change, the lists change. The number one focus is health and safety, but the number two focus is capacity. I'll have this list distributed so you can see it. I just got it a couple days ago, and I'll distribute it so you can see what's going on in your favorite school district.
Senator Nicholas.
If I may add to that, you know what districts like to do, and we see it in the Medicaid program, we see it in all the programs, where people see a trend over 3 years, and they want to draw a line out as though it's a linear line. So if you have 2 or 3 years of additional students, you draw it out. The question is, and I mean, there are a lot of demographic ability to go in and see what your growth is. But folks, we know that doesn't happen. And part of the one, I've always said that the director of the School Facilities Commission has the hardest job in the state, trying to marshal our assets and deal with all the districts and their desire to build. Communities want to build because these are building blocks of communities. But communities are always positive, and when they see a trend of 2 years, they just want to take it and draw off a line that says we're going to double in size. And, Frank, we know that doesn't happen. People hit plateaus. You have ups and downs, and capacity issues are always going to be one of the most difficult problems to ever deal with because what we don't want to do is overbuild and have to pay for unused facilities. But as long as we're paying the bills, local communities are going to want to get as large of buildings as they can, and because they're not worried about the cost of it, because once we pay for it out of our funds, then we pay for the major maintenance, we pay for the heat, and we're sort of stuck with what we build.
Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one request that perhaps we could have circulated that that chart. I don't think...
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah. It's my order.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, just to spend a little bit more reflection on the capacity situation and how things went for the Select Facilities Committee over the interim, there was a lot of discussion and concern regarding capacity. Districts didn't agree necessarily with the School Facilities Department on what their capacity in their school would be rated at. There was a lot of concern, so there was a study that was put into place to basically go and measure each of the schools. And that was a very time-consuming study that was put into place. And again, once the initial information, the initial data was posted, there was again disagreement. And we heard testimony that said, well, this isn't really true. There's some inaccuracies here. They calculated this in a wrong way. We would have done it differently. So as the interim progressed, we got to the point where we finally said, look, we want to make sure that before another list is released, that all of the districts go through, verify, and come to agreement between what the district thinks the capacity is and what the school facilities department thinks the capacity is. Again, that's time-consuming, and that's one of the reasons why we've ended up with delay on the next list. It was, to some degree, the school facilities committee trying to ensure that we don't have arguments in the future regarding what the true capacity for a school is. We felt that it was important enough that we were willing to delay it a little bit to try and prevent the fighting. Of course, as it turns out, we didn't, but that was our best effort.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I do have an eye on the clock. A question for future reference. We don't need to discuss it today. It may be relevant, it may not be relevant, but I regard to the ongoing process that we've been involved with some time now. We have, in the midst of that process some time back, injected this idea of the 16-to-1 classroom capacity, and I'd like to hear how that's affected this whole conversation on capacity at some point before this bill makes its way through, but not today. Thank you.
Question's been called for. All those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 105, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate File 105 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is passed.
Senator Hastert.
Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Members of the Senate, it's a rare opportunity for me to have some family come in. I have my sister and her husband traveling through Wyoming on their from Texas on their way to Seattle. I happen to have an opportunity to stop by here, and I'd like you to welcome them to the Senate.
Welcome. Welcome to the Senate. Hope you don't catch whatever Senator Hastert has. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that we stand recess until 2 p.m.
Heard the... Oh, wait. Announcements. Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet in room S-13. At 12:30 to discuss the following bill, Senate File 16, Aeronautics Programs, a re-referral, Senate File 125, Public Employees Requirements Upon Rehiring 2, Senate File 72, Medicaid Benefit Recovery, a re-referral, and Senate File 90, Administrative Control of Acquired Institutional Lands, another re-referral.
Senator Bob Flader. Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highway, Military Affairs, will meet this evening, 10 minutes after adjournment, Room S14, to discuss Senate File 29, Hitchhiking, Senate File 93, Use of Cell Phones While Driving, Senate File 116, School Bus Driver's Cell Phone Use Only, Senate File 126, Overweight and Oversized Vehicles. Thank you. Senator Case.
Mr. President, thank you. Your committee number 7 will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in room S19 to hear Senate File 59, Insurance, Consumer Protections, Senate File 86, County Offices, Business Days, Senate File 91, County Commissioners, Election to Modify Numbers.
Mr. Jory, floor leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Committee number 12, Rules, will meet tomorrow at 9:15 in room S5 to consider Senate File 61, the Revisor's Bill.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning up in room S14, the usual meeting room, to discuss Senate File 114, Assault of Healthcare Providers. We're against it. And Senate File 115, Protective Services Investigation Amendments.
Senator Hines.
Mr. President, Committee Number 9, Minerals, will meet in approximately 15 minutes when we adjourn to take up the Senate File 49, Industrial Siting Exploration of Permits, and Senate File 136, Seismic Exploration 3.
Further announcements. You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senate stands in recess until 2 p.m.